The Gist is brought to you by Harry's, the shaving company that offers German-engineered blades, well-designed handles, and shipping right to your door. Visit harrys.com for $5 off your first purchase with the promo code GIST.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
It's Thursday, April 14th, 2016. From Slate, it's The Gist. I'm Mike Pesca. There will be talk of millionaires and billionaires at the Democratic debate tonight, presumably claims to who's the real New Yorker, and I predict we can expect some sly swipes at Ted Cruz's talk of New York values. But here to tell us what we can also expect tonight is Andrea Mitchell of MSNBC questioning Clinton campaign manager Robbie Mook.
What we can also expect tonight is that he is going to go after Hillary Clinton for what he would call the hypocrisy. She was out with the Verizon strikers yesterday, hours after he had done the same. Yet she gave a paid speech to Verizon in May of 2013, for which she earned $225,000. Can you tell us the circumstances of that speech?
Well, again, the question here is, who are Democrats going to nominate? Who's going to get things done in Washington?
Let's get back to this.
No, that wasn't at all the question. Don't tell Andrea what the question was. She asked the question. In case you forgot, here is the actual question, as she put it to Robbie Mook again.
And she was out with the strikers, yet she took $225,000 from the very company that they are striking against.
Because time and again in her career, Hillary Clinton has stood with people against powerful interests.
She took the $225,000 because she's against powerful interests. Verizon is not a powerful interest. Verizon charges $125 a month for cable. They can't give you an installation window any more accurate than sometime between noon and 2019. Let's try it again, Robbie Mook. All right, Hillary Clinton stood with the strikers against Verizon, but she took $225,000 from them a few years ago. So your answer about walking with the strikers when you took
$225,000 from the company they're striking against.
Well, I think Senator Sanders should answer for the fact that in his first election campaign for Congress, that the NRA funded the campaign against his opponent.
Ah, great, Robbie. Hillary took money from Verizon because Vermont politics and the NRA. No, Robbie, here's your answer. Well, being paid by Verizon's not a bad thing. In fact, all the Verizon workers are paid by Verizon. If they weren't, they wouldn't be Verizon workers. In fact, being paid by Verizon is the very thing that the strikers are striking for. So taking money from Verizon, that is a very pro-striker stance. Robbie Mook, I'm here. I'm available. My fee, $225,000. On the show today, a spiel about the death of a voice you know, a voice that was part of this nutritious breakfast. But before you have breakfast, consider the alternative. Not having breakfast, not having lunch, not having dinner, not even having that handful of nuts at 4. What? No nuts at 4? That's right, because we're talking about fasting. Maria Konnikova is here to assess the wisdom or foolhardiness of that act. If you've been thinking that we haven't done an Is That Bullshit in a while, well, you're wrong. We're pretty consistent with this. Or maybe we're trying to help you by putting you on an Is That Bullshit fast. Because there are those who say that fasting is not only something to get through for religious purposes, but has a healthful benefit. Hey, is that bullshit? Luckily, Maria Konnikova is here to weigh in. Hello, Maria.
Hello, Mike.
So I'm not going to gainsay the Jews on Yom Kippur, the Muslims during the holy month of Ramadan between sunup and sundown. And anyway, I don't know if, like, you know, an 18-hour fast is a fast. But not going with food for long periods of time, this to me seems anathema to not just healthfulness, but joyfulness. But there are those who say that fasting is good for you. What's the claim there?
Yeah, so this is a claim that in the medical community, at least, has been around for almost a century. Mm-hmm. It's about 80 years ago, between 80 and 90 years ago, some researchers noticed some lab animals who had caloric restriction, so they were eating fewer calories than they should, were living longer.
That makes sense to me. But caloric restriction, smaller meals, and fasting are two different things.
Yes. But that is where doctors basically started saying, is there anything to this, including fasting?
You know,
what about caloric restriction to the extreme, not eating anything. Exactly. What ends up happening? And obviously, religions have been doing this for centuries and centuries and centuries. And fasting is a part of every single major religion to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the first places where researchers interested in this actually went to look for effects. What does fasting do? They looked at religious communities that already fasted, kind of as part of their religion.
Yes.
And the findings...
Because you don't have to pay the subjects like $25 to participate in your survey.
Yes, this is very, very true. You can just observe them. And the findings are very, very mixed when it comes to that. So there are some good things, it seems, come from fasting for a short period of time, but also some bad things.
Mm-hmm.
And so there has been better data in recent years that's not just about religion, where they look at people who fast for 2 days a week, but not consecutively, and people who, you know, fast for 1 day a week and look at it for some period of time. And you see certain changes happening in metabolism, obviously. And it seems like when you do that for a short period of time, it actually can have some sort of beneficial health impact in terms of the hormones in your blood, your glucose sensitivity, insulin production, things like that in the immediate term.
But they compared it to what? Just someone who was eating normally as opposed to someone who was eating that, you know, inspired them to look at those restricted diets?
Right. So, and here's the thing. Obviously, a certain type of person enters into those studies.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have any sort of eating problems, you can't.
Yeah.
That's kind of one of their prerequisites. It turns out that this is really, really hard to study because the more we learn about it, the more we realize that there are all sorts of interplaying factors in terms of your genotype. So what kind of a person are you? People respond incredibly differently to fasting. What kind of background do you have? How old are you? How are you sleeping? When are you eating and when are you fasting? These end up being in some ways more important than actual caloric intake. And so while we still have some data on caloric restriction, by the way, that data is not as steadfast as people think, because a lot of it is taken from animals and hasn't been replicated necessarily in human beings. And it turns out that certain wild animals, when you put them in that sort of caloric restriction condition in the lab, actually do worse and don't live as long and have all sorts of problems. So even that data is not, it's pretty good, but there are people who say, actually, it's not 100%, and we do have a lot of variation. But when it comes to fasting, that variation is much, much longer. And when I'm talking about age, we know that fasting can have really bad impacts on reproduction.
Mm. So, I thought you were going to say the very young and the very old. Because it always, everything is like, except for the very young and the very old.
Well, the very young and the very old, yes.
Yes.
You do not want to fast.
To get pregnant.
Yes, you don't want to fast if you're a growing kid.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. All of these studies are done in the laboratory. When you fast, you also have to make sure that you get enough nutrients the other days.
Mm-hmm.
And they control your diet and you know exactly what you're supposed to eat, which right away is going to improve your health because you're going to get full nutritional impact. You're going to stay hydrated. This is a huge thing, by the way. One of the reasons that Ramadan and Yom Kippur and other sorts of religious fasts can go wrong is people become dehydrated. And this is really, really bad because you're not actually even supposed to drink water.
Yeah.
So that's a huge thing. So in the lab, they're making sure that you get every single nutrient. When you're doing this on your own, you don't. And so you end up having problems associated with this. And what people don't do when they're doing this on their own is they don't moderate their intake on the days they're not fasting. We get incredibly hungry when we don't eat for 24 hours. And so then we overcompensate by eating too much. And that's actually really bad. That can really disrupt your metabolic cycles.
And I also think like when a religious person or just a person who thinks that maybe there's some benefit to this does a fast, then they have a tendency on the day right afterwards to overindulge.
I think that often happens.
Yeah.
So we were talking about reproduction. So we know that diet really has a huge impact on epigenetics and on how the fetus develops. So if you're a pregnant woman who doesn't get enough to eat, then your fetus is going to be prone to obesity and have all sorts of metabolic disruption problems. If you're a man who's on a diet, when your sperm is formed, and that's the sperm that ends up impregnating the egg, that can also have some similar epigenetic effects.
Wait, is it that day's sperm? Do we have to do another Is That Bullshit?
I have no idea.
When is the sperm formed?
I have no idea. I actually don't know
the
answer to that question.
Timing of sperm from a fast.
Yes. Yeah. Timing of sperm formation from fast.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
that was Tuesday's sperm.
Exactly. So I don't know the answer to that question, but I do know that sperm can affect the fetus. And so if the sperm in question was from a calorically deprived individual,
interesting,
that can also be problematic.
Interesting.
And fasting is, like I said, different for different people. So if you're overweight, this can obviously help you lose weight, especially if you're doing it in a controlled setting where you're also on any sort of watching your diet type of thing. What you have to be very careful of, though, is obviously not overindulging
on the days
you're not eating.
I would think
that
there are a lot better ways to lose weight, though.
There are a lot better ways to lose weight, yes. But one of the things that we do know is when you don't eat, your body, your immune system becomes a little bit compromised, even short term. So not eating for 24 or 48 hours has this effect. And so, for instance, if you cut yourself, you're more likely to get an infection. And a lot of religions are very smart about this. So when you're sick, you don't fast. Or if you get sick while fasting, you get food right away. And you're supposed to. I mean, that you can try to counteract the effects of calorie deprivation by eating right away. So that's a bad effect.
Now, the one through line of all of this seems to be, let's look at fasting from a very careful scientific perspective, nutrition all throughout, kind of the best case scenario. It does seem to me that a lot of the claims that are made, and since we're doing a little bullshit detection about fasting, are, I don't know, not of the scientific in a lab setting type claims. You know, they're of the ilk of the cleanse, miracle cure type claims. And then because you're not getting the nutrition before and after and doing it right, I would look at them with particular suspicion.
Yes, that seems about accurate. As far as diets go, not eating for 24 hours every single week probably is not going to hurt you as long as you keep hydrating.
Would any of these studies say you might consider incorporating it into your life?
Some people would certainly say that.
But have the studies borne that out as the beneficial effect of it opposed to it's not bad for you?
Yes, but also no, because yes, there have been studies. I realize there have been studies that have borne that out that show some positive changes on insulin production, on ghrelin. On
what's ghrelin?
Ghrelin is one of the hunger regulating hormones.
Did not know about ghrelin.
Yeah. And in a lot of obese people, ghrelin can get messed up. Leptin is the one that tells you when to stop eating, and ghrelin is the one that tells you to keep eating. So when you're overweight, those signals tend to be messed up, and so you keep eating even though you're not hungry.
Yeah. Yes. My ghrelin's shy. I got shy. I'm not big boned. I got shy ghrelin.
Yes.
I don't have the angel and the devil on my shoulder. I got leptin and ghrelin. I love it.
And those types of things can help cognition. So you might actually get sharper in 24 hours when you're not eating. If you're drinking, I keep saying if you're drinking, because a lot of fasts don't have you drink.
Yeah.
And so that can actually help your brain in the immediate term, because the brain is actually very smart. And in a lot of...
I've met some that aren't.
In obese individuals, you often get memory deficits because those hormone productions are messed up. But when you fast for 24 hours, you often get improved memory, because if you think about evolutionarily, the brain is remembering this because it's trying to figure out, you know, why am I not getting nutrients? What's in my environment? How can I avoid this in the future? So spatial memory really improves in those moments. So there have been studies that have looked at that specifically, and they found short-term effects. However, and I really can't stress this enough, all of these studies have been done correctly in the sense of you're getting adequate nutrition all of the other days, both in terms of calories and in terms of specific nutrients. So when you're doing this on your own, it's almost impossible to replicate those types of conditions unless you're a scientist. So a lot of researchers swear by this and give talks about this because they do it themselves, but they run these studies. They know exactly what they're doing. It's really difficult for lay people to follow that. And so I would say that for most people, fasting is probably not a great idea. And we do know there's very good evidence that eating late at night is bad. when you eat is actually more important than how many calories you eat. So we've talked about
that. To me, it's unbelievable. I can't believe that's true.
Well, we've talked about
this. No, I mean,
this,
I do believe it, but yeah.
Yeah, we've talked about same exact calories, but distributed differently throughout the day. You gain weight in one condition and you don't in another. And so what can end up happening if you fast for 24 hours is then you're all sorts of hungry and you eat at the wrong times.
No, but right around 11, my ghrelin, I have ghrelin at 11. It kicks in. My ghrelin starts yelling and I have to eat gelatin. Okay. So let's do it. Let's issue our proclamation. Fasting. There are healthful benefits to fasting. Is that bullshit?
No, that's not bullshit. There are some benefits. If you're healthy, if you're not pregnant or planning to become pregnant, and if otherwise you're eating in a very healthy and nutrition-saturated way, then yes, there can be certain benefits to fasting.
All right. Maria Konnikova is the author of The Confidence Game and Mastermind, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes. Why not plug that one too? Thank you, Maria.
Thank you, Mike.
Harry's Razors. Has your face got some fur that you wish to obscure? Harry's Razors. Whiskers on your face that seem a bit out of place? Okay, here's the thing about Harry's Razors. They don't need a slogan. They don't need a jingle. They just need you to explain things. Later on in the show, I'm talking about breakfast cereals, the quintessential thing with a slogan and jingle. But Harry's has a story, and I just think they can make their case. So let me help them make their case to you. Case one, quality. German-engineered five-blade cartridges. They bought the factory in Germany. Their quality is guaranteed, and it's a full refund if you're not happy. Now, the refund touches on case number two, price. Factory direct prices. I told you about the factory in Germany. Cut out the middleman. They ship right to your door. They're half the price of the leading brand, and I've seen studies. I've seen this written up in the Wall Street Journal. They last as long or longer than the leading brand. Quality, price, convenience. You know, hey, can you get the store manager over here? Can you unlock the razors like it's a diamond? You just go to the website, and you're out of there in 30 seconds, and what a deal you get. Harry's starter set, which is called the Truman, is a great option for new customers. For $15, you get a razor handle, moisturizing shave cream, and three of Harry's five-blade German-engineered razors. And we have a special code if you are indeed a first-time customer, $5 off your first purchase with promo code GIST. So go to harrys.com right now. That's harrys.com. Make sure to use the code GIST at checkout. And that way they know that you got there from the GIST. And now the spiel, part of this nutritious breakfast. At the age of 93, Arthur Anderson has died. Anderson was an actor who appeared in sitcoms and cop procedurals and the Woody Allen movie Zelig. You might not know the name, but you've heard him. Here is the decidedly un-Irish Arthur Anderson's marshmallow-inflected brogue.
Magically delicious.
Lucky the Leprechaun, who eagerly advanced the idea that if you surround anything with toast, milk, juice, blueberries, fish oil, and a B1 vitamin, it can be said to be an important part of a nutritious breakfast. Lucky Charms. Much like the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, the Lucky Charms Leprechaun remains one of the few areas of cultural appropriation that is uncontroversial, except as a rhetorical counterpoint. Oh yeah? What about the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, huh? What about the Lucky Charms Leprechaun? Yeah, what about this guy?
They're magically delicious, delicious, delicious.
Look, when the Ancient Order of Hibernians arranges a mass protest, we'll talk. But Lucky was, when you think about it, part of a much deeper tradition. The cereal spokesman. These days, kids don't even know what character goes with what cereal. Oh, they know Captain Crunch. Sure, he's right on the box. He's the name of the cereal. But if the spokes character is only implied in the cereal, a toucan for Fruit Loops, a rabbit for Trix, to say nothing of Diggum, the spokes frog for a Super Sugar Smacks, later changed to Honey Smacks, when of course the real dangerous substance is smack, not sugar or honey. When it's that kind of character, the kids don't know who he is. Lucky was a unique spokesman. I believe he stands alone in the taxonomy of cereal spokes things. Hear me out. Most cereal spokes things are at heart pitchmen, and therefore they want you to try their product. There's Tony.
They're great!
The touting tiger. There's Toucan Sam.
Follow my nose! It always knows!
leading you to Fruit Loops. There's Frankenberry and Count Chocula fighting it out so you try their eponymous morning munchies.
Today we'll have a ball at breakfast with my delicious cereal.
Count Chocula!
Ah, music to my ears.
These characters are all enablers, but then there are other serial spokesthings that are the seekers, the characters who don't have the serial but want the serial. Now, a special note, Super Sugar Bear started as a seeker in the 1960s. He was trying to steal cereal from Granny Goodwitch, but he turned enabler when Granny, well, she died. I mean, look at the actuarial tables. She died. But most seekers, most serial seekers, stay such, and that is part of their appeal. There's the Trix Rabbit.
Silly rabbit, you tricks are still for kids.
There's the Cookie Crook, trying to steal your Cookie Crisp, and in the process save you from type 2 diabetes.
Cookie Crook, you'll do anything to get the real cookie taste of Cookie Crisp cereal.
There's even some more obscure ones, like Crunchasaurus Rex, a Cruncheroo, that was the name of the cereal, a Cruncheroo craving purple dinosaur, whose defense lawyers were always invoking the entrapment defense or having Cruncheroos deemed an attractive nuisance under tort law.
Rex will do almost anything.
But Lucky was neither larcenous reptile from the late Mesozoic era, nor a charismatic large cat, the object of whose apex predation makes the milk turn sweet. Lucky is not a seeker, and he's not an enabler. He's a withholder. He has the Lucky Charms, and it is the children's quest to get them. This, I believe, explains his staying power over all these years. Well, that and a casual cultural attitude towards Gaelic stereotypes. But children are wary. They know when they're being sold to. Entreaties from all varieties of toucan, moose, golden bear, they're easily brushed off, if indeed they're even heard in this crowded media environment. And while it does give power to kids to deny their fix of tricks, those advertising campaigns were born in an earlier era before the age of plenty. In this, the era of abundance, a child is less likely to withhold a serving of cereal than to happily give over a brimming bowl of corn pops delivered with a lecture about portion size. But children still do thrill to the chase. And if the statistics about childhood obesity are to be believed, the place where they are most apt to take part in a chase is by watching it on television involving a figure from Irish folklore. And while Arthur Anderson, the voice of Lucky, has passed on, his legacy endures in cupboards, on TV screens, and in second period math class, which is right about the time you come crashing down from your sugar high. Mr. Anderson's family has asked to mark his passing in lieu of flowers you might wish to supply, pink hearts, yellow moons, orange stars, and yes, green clovers. And now we cue the Lucky Charm sad theme. Wah, 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 wah. That's it for today's show. Just producer Andrea Salenzi was briefly replaced in the 70s by Waldo the Wizard, a man in a green wizard's cap and gown and black sneakers, who described the gist as "Ibble de dibble delicious." Steve Lickteig was originally cast as Twinkles, a magical roto-tailed elephant who favored sweetened oat and corn-shaped stars, but instead was recast as executive producer of Slate Podcasts. Andy Bowers is chief content officer of the Panoply Network. The other title he was considering was Mr. Wonderful, but as you know, Mr. Wonderful was a clown-like character with red hair, a blue top hat, and a built-in periscope, and a purple polka-dotted white sport coat worn over a red turtleneck shirt. His surprise was a creamy vanilla or chocolate-flavored filling inside each corn and rice-puffed cereal shell. The gist. It's a honey-sweet vitamin treat. Oompuru depuru dupuru, and thanks for listening.